the reason that he's such an interesting figure for collectors and enthusiasts of photography today is because he is part of an absolutely extraordinary and glamorous world that includes, you know, the surrealist artists, the couture designers, the great performers of the age. It's a wonderfully sort of international story as well.
Willkommen bei Die Sucht zu sehen, dem Griesebach-Podcast. Alle zwei Wochen sprechen wir hier mit Menschen, die etwas in der Kunst oder über sie zu sagen haben. Diese Woche zu Gast ist die Kuratorin Susanna Brown. Susannas Schwerpunkt ist die historische Porträt- und Modefotografie. Sie hat 13 Jahre lang für das großartige Victorian Albert Museum in London gearbeitet. Derzeit läuft auch eine von ihr kuratierte Ausstellung bei Griesebach. Gezeigt werden die eleganten Schwarz-Weiß-Fotografien von George Herningen Hühne. Der war der Lieblingsfotograf von Stars wie Marlene Dietrich und der Lebensgefährte von Horst P. Horst. Er fotografierte für Vogue und Harper's Bazaar und dient bis heute als Quell der Inspiration für Fotografen und Filmemacher. Was seine Arbeiten so besonders macht und wie sich die Modefotografie heute neben den Millionen von Influencern und Selfies behaupten kann, Susanna Brown wird es uns erzählen. Wir sind gespannt und sagen herzlich willkommen. Dear Susanna, you are a curator with a special interest in the history of portrait and fashion photography. You work with major museums, art galleries and archives and got into fashion photography by stealing copies of Vogue magazine from your older, cooler sister, right?
That is right, yeah. My sister's always been much cooler than me. When I was a little girl, she always had, you know, Vogue and Cosmopolitan, Elle, all the magazines that I loved to borrow and read. And yeah, I think that was certainly my first experience of fashion photography. And actually, when I went later on to university in Bristol, I really got more into working with photography in the darkroom. And I used to run the little student darkroom at university and teach other students, you know, how to take pictures and make prints in the darkroom, but also host little exhibitions of our student pictures.
You worked at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Tell us a little bit about that place.
Yeah, I worked for 13 years at the Victoria and Albert Museum, or the V&A, as we often call it for short. And the V&A is really a magical place to me. You know, it's one of the world's greatest museums of art and design and performance. It's a really eclectic, rich collection of everything from teapots to Renaissance fashion and artworks by Leonardo and Michelangelo. You know, it's an incredible mix of things, but it also has the most extraordinary photography collection. And actually, the V&A was one of the first museums anywhere in the world to collect photographs, beginning in the 1850s. It's a wonderful history that the museum has in terms of photography. And my job there as photography curator was to research the collections, to make it available and accessible to the public, both, you know, in person but also digitally, and to produce books and exhibitions about the great photographers, both from history and contemporary practitioners too.
Mm-hmm. So you spend your days surrounded by the world's best images. In your view, what is artistic and what is mediocre fashion photography? Could you tell that?
I mean, as you say, it's just my view, you know, it's yeah, just a personal view. But I suppose for me, the best pictures are the ones that I can see in my mind long after I've experienced the photograph. The pictures that we see day to day all around us are, for the most part, very forgettable. And as soon as we've seen them, they disappear forever from our mind. But for me, I think the pictures that have that power to stay in the memory bank, if you like, you know, to stay in the mind's eye, are the pictures that are the most, you know, exciting. And in terms of fashion photography, I think it's always been said that the most successful fashion pictures are the ones that can be taken away from their original context of the magazine, sort of removed from the page and placed in a different context, such as the walls at Griesebach Gallery or a museum, and that those images can have a power and a resonance away from the magazine page. And that's something that a lot of other people have said as well. You know, that's not unique to my view of photography.
And in that respect, like a photography that can stand on its own, what is your favorite image of all time and why?
Oh my goodness me, that's really difficult. My favorite image of all time.
What springs to your mind right away when you hear that question?
There are definitely a few, but I guess the images that most excite me are those that also have fascinating stories behind the characters within these pictures, or the narrative of the picture speaks to us as much as the aesthetic value or the beauty of the image itself. So I guess there are images that are certainly iconic. George Heunigen Huene's Divers, of course, from his years at Paris Vogue in the early 1930s is an iconic image from fashion photography. But for me, on a personal level, you know, why it's interesting is because of the story that goes behind that picture, that it's a mirage, it's a trick. Like so many brilliant fashion images, you know, we look at that picture and we think we are looking at a couple gazing out to sea or at a serene swimming pool. But in fact, you know, that picture was made on the roof of the Vogue studio in Paris with the roar of the traffic and the bustle of shoppers and people moving along the Champs-Élysées directly below that building. So it's a complete fiction. And we think that the two figures that Huene photographed in that picture are his lover and later, you know, close friend, he remained close friends with throughout his life, fellow photographer Horst P. Horst. And we think the other figure in the picture is the model and photographer Lee Miller. And the three of them had a really interesting friendship and working relationship in Paris at that time. So I guess for me, there is so much going on in that image beyond just its beauty. And it is an exquisite composition. It's an absolutely stunning, perfectly balanced, harmonious composition. But I also love the stories about these figures and what the picture as a whole symbolizes.
Mm-hmm. So are you more interested in the fiction of an image or in the real story?
Gosh, I think both. I think we all are, aren't we? For fashion photography in particular, it's about escapism. You know, as it always has been throughout the whole history of fashion magazines, most people who read those magazines are looking for a moment of escape. They're looking to have an experience of a kind of fantasy world that is very far removed from their real life. You know, there are very few people throughout history who have read the fashion magazines and then been able to afford to buy all of the couture and jewels and beautiful pieces that they see depicted on the magazine pages. It's about dreams. And Irving Penn, the great Vogue fashion photographer who came after, a generation after Heunigen Huene, but he said about his career in fashion photography, "I always thought we were selling dreams, not clothes." And I love that expression. I think it sums up really beautifully what fashion photography is really all about.
Yeah. Have you seen the new cover of the Scandinavian issue of Vogue yet?
Yes, of course. I think everyone has that.
For those who haven't, it shows the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg petting a horse. And it is not too easy, I think, to recognize her because it's not frontal. You see her profile and you cannot really see the clothes she's wearing. It is a very unusual image for a fashion magazine cover. Or what do you say?
I totally agree. It is unusual, but actually, you know, what we've seen in the last few years, in the whole kind of international scene in fashion, not just in Scandinavia, but is this awakening and this awareness the fashion industry cannot go on as it has been. It's one of the most polluting, destructing, exploitative industries on the planet. And rather than trying to shy away from that, I think it's brilliant, actually, that Scandinavian Vogue, for their very first issue, have recognised this is one of the biggest things that we are going to tackle, and we care more about the environment and the good of the planet than we do about the colour of our lipstick. And, you know, it's it's really encouraging, I think, to see that, because actually fashion magazines, because they have such a big readership and a wide audience, they always have and will continue, I think, to get across messages far beyond messages about style and the latest trends and what to wear. You know, if we look back through history, for example, during the years of the Second World War, the fashion magazines were also including news events and including reports of real life. And I think it's fantastic that Scandinavian Vogue are really putting the issue of ethics and the environment front and center for their inaugural issue. I think that's a great signal to the whole world.
It is a great signal, I think, but it is a bit paradox to print a cover story in a fashion magazine with an activist who speaks out against so many things that Vogue stands for, like new seasons, new clothes, more clothes, traveling all over the world to shoot the clothes. So they can't change overnight. So what are they going to do on issue number two?
You'll have to ask the editors. I don't know. But I think in the pandemic, you know, what we've also had is a stark realization that, as you just mentioned, this idea of traveling all over the world for glamorous photo shoots simply hasn't been possible, but also that it's unnecessary. And the pandemic has kind of stimulated a new approach and a more kind of economical and environmentally friendly approach. You know, we don't need to take a troop of models and stylists and hundreds of cases of couture to Barbados to get a great memorable image. And I think that is, you know, in some way a small silver lining of this awful pandemic times that we've lived through. We're understanding a more environmentally aware way of conveying fashion, and also our choices about what we buy are changing all the time, when we realize, you know, we don't need to be wedded to this idea of ongoing sort of seasonal trends and continuing changes. It's about investing in high quality garments that are well made and made with care, without exploitation, that will stand the test of time throughout the seasons, but also throughout the years. And I think more of us now are recognising that and taking responsibility for what we buy.
In traditional histories of photography, fashion images have often been overlooked, but many of the world's most accomplished photographers have worked in fashion, right?
Oh, most definitely. And I think, you know, it's since around the 1980s, when fashion photography started being seen in exhibitions in museums, it has been taken much more seriously, and, you know, it's been included in auctions, and collectors have wanted to buy fashion pictures. And as you say, you know, if we look back to the beginnings of photography, people like Baron de Meyer and Edward Steichen, Huney, of course, these photographers were not only working in fashion, they were also very much renowned for the other work they were producing. You know, one of the first photographers to gain kind of great acclaim in Paris was Man Ray. And of course, Man Ray, much better known today as a fine artist than a sort of, in inverted commas, fashion photographer. But creating fashion images was a big part of his work, and it enabled him to finance the other parts of his work that were less lucrative. And I think it's quite a false division that has been created between fine art photography and fashion photography. These are the same things. It's just often you're being paid a better wage if you're making a fashion picture. But as a photographer, the kind of picture you make isn't necessarily going to be of a lesser quality than the fine artwork that you're producing. It's all part of your aesthetic and your output. So it's a kind of fake division, I think, that's been created.
You just mentioned that fashion photography started to wander in the museums in the 80s. Why then? Why in the 80s? What happened?
So if we go back at kind of another decade to the 1970s, what we see is the beginning of major auctions for photography. So photography beginning to be seen as a more serious kind of collectible art form. And the 1970s is also a time when a lot of the big museums around the world began taking photography more seriously, you know, perhaps employing more staff and curators to care for photography or to produce exhibitions. That's not to say photography had never been collected, but often it lived more in the archive or the library part of a museum. You know, it wasn't really there for presentation to the public. And certainly at the V&A in London, this was also the time in the 1970s when fashion was beginning to be an important part of the collection. So examples of historic and contemporary couture and fashion were being collected and exhibited. So these things kind of go hand in hand, really.
Mm-hmm. So fashion photography started out in early 20th century. What were the major changes to date?
Well, the biggest sort of shift in the publishing industry really was towards the end of the 19th century, when the printing processes really improved in terms of the possibilities of reproducing photographs on newsprint or magazine pages. Before then, it was almost impossible to do it or very, very expensive. But with the introduction of things like half-tone printing processes, photography became much more prominent in magazines. And there are great people like Mr. Condé Nast, who was the owner of Vogue and Vanity Fair magazines and several other big titles. And Mr. Condé Nast understood very early on how photography could revolutionise his magazine. You know, before that we see predominantly hand-drawn illustrations. And in fact, Heuningen Hune, in the middle of the 1920s, when he began working at Paris Vogue, he was employed as an illustrator, not as a photographer. You know, so he was creating fashion drawings for the magazine. He was also painting backdrops and designing backdrops for other photographers. But it wasn't until slightly later in the 1920s that he actually started taking photographs himself. And of course, I think it's important to remember when we look at Heuningen Hune's pictures that this is an era when the complexities of working in the studio were very great. And the photographers were working with these enormous cameras producing negatives about 10 by 8 inches. So individual plates had to be slotted in and out of the camera for each photograph that was taken. It wasn't a quick roll of film, you know, so it was a very labour-intensive way of working. The camera was very heavy, difficult to move, cumbersome. Likewise, the lights in the studio were extremely hot and heavy. So it was a very physical kind of work. And that's often why when we see portraits of George Heuningen Hune in the early part of his career, if he's at work in the studio, he's kind of stripped off a lot of his clothes and often is just wearing a t-shirt or a vest, because it's a very hot, very energetic way of working.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays, influencers take selfies and are being wooed and encouraged and paid very well to do so by fashion clients. Is that a backlash for fashion photography, those people who do it all on themselves with their mobile phones?
I don't know. I think there'll always be the amateur photographers like you and me, you know, taking pictures with our phones, and there'll always be the professionals too. And I think there is space for everyone. It doesn't have to be one or the other. We don't have to choose. And particularly in the digital realm, there is even more space than there ever has been for these kind of different approaches and these different modes of photography to exist. And I guess for me, that's kind of part of what makes photography such a special art form.
But then there's media budgets, and if the budgets all go to the influencers, there's nothing left for the people who, yeah, invested in the studio and equipment and, yeah, all that.
Certainly, I think if you talk to contemporary fashion photographers, a lot of them will say, you know, if they've been in the profession for 30 years, they'll say, oh, the budgets are a bit smaller now than they used to be. But often that actually just encourages those people to be more creative. Often having tight budgets allows us to kind of think about things from a different angle, from a different way in, and to create something sort of even more exciting. And certainly when we look back through the records at fashion magazines, we see how often throughout history the photographers have really clashed and argued with the art directors, with the editors, and so on. But often that sort of friction or tension has led to kind of enormous creativity. And it's not always been a sort of entirely negative thing.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the exhibition you are curating right now at Griesbach here in Berlin with the photographer George Heunigen-Hühne.
Absolutely. So we were invited by Berlin Photo Week to create a show in the beautiful gallery next door to the Griesbach Villa in Berlin. And it's the perfect space for about 50 photographs. So it's a great size for us. And so I work with the estate archives of Heunigen-Hühne, or Hühne, as he was often known to his friends. When I talk about him, I normally just call him Hühne or George, to be familiar. But it was for us an opportunity really to explore some of the treasures in the huge estate archives, which are held in Stockholm in Sweden, and to pull out some of those treasures to share with visitors in Berlin. And we wanted to show not only those fantastic fashion pictures from Vogue and from Harper's Bazaar magazines, but also celebrate his work in Hollywood. He produced some incredibly glamorous portraits from the 1930s through to the 1950s of great cinema icons of Hollywood, directors as well as actors. So one of the sections of the exhibition's focus is focused on that subject, but also a much less well-known part of his work are his travel pictures. He made some very ambitious and extraordinary journeys through Africa and Europe, and produced several books of his photographs and his diaries of these large trips that he made. So we've dedicated one section of the exhibition to those absolutely stunning travel pictures. And then the final section of the exhibition is a celebration of his work in platinum palladium. A lot of your listeners who are enthusiastic about photography will know platinum palladium is a complex but incredibly beautiful process using metal more expensive than gold to create wonderfully rich, velvety black and white prints that sometimes almost look like charcoal drawings. You know, they have a very matte quality and a softness and a great range of grey tones that simply isn't possible with other black and white techniques like gelatin silver printing. So for the final section of the exhibition at Griesbach, what we have is a group of 15 platinum palladium prints that were made by Hühne's good friend Horst after Hühne's death. If you like, it's Horst's highlights from his friend's life. So he went through the archive and picked his favourite pictures from Hühne's career and reproduced them as limited edition prints using the platinum process. And then at the very end of the show, we've included 5 very large new platinum palladium prints. And these are made by the estate archives this year. They're 5 pictures which Horst didn't ever print when he was looking at platinum. So they're sort of lesser known images from Hühne's career. And so I hope that visitors who come to the exhibition will feel that they're getting a glimpse into the range of work that he produced. You know, we talk about him as a fashion photographer, but it's also portraiture, it's travel, it's still life. You know, he was accomplished in many different areas of photography. And I think that comes across in the selection that we've made for the exhibition.
So Hühne was hired as a photographer for Vogue, Vanity Fair and Harper's Bazaar. When he started out in the 20s and 30s, fashion photographers came from a more artistic background. Hühne studied painting and was friends with Man Ray, who you already mentioned, and Salvador Dalí. Is that one reason why his work is so interesting for art collectors nowadays?
That's a great question. I think absolutely. He was part of this extraordinary creative world of Paris in the 1920s and 30s. You know, at that time, Paris wasn't only the centre of the fashion world and the couture, it was also the centre of creativity, you know, this extraordinary melting pot of creatives and writers, artists, performers, ballerinas who had fled, as Huney fled, from Russia, or who had travelled from America, as Man Ray and Lee Miller did, or who were born in France, like his friend Coco Chanel or his friend Cartier-Bresson. So there's this wonderful mix of people that he is introduced to when he arrives in Paris in the middle of the 20s and then starts working for Vogue and Vanity Fair. It's not until 10 years later that he starts working for Harper's Bazaar. He actually has a kind of fight with the staff at Vogue and decides to leave to go and work for the kind of rival publication. At this time, he's not only working in Paris, he's also visiting America quite regularly on assignment, and he remains in New York working for Harper's Bazaar throughout the war years. But I think, as you say, the reason that he's such an interesting figure for collectors and enthusiasts of photography today is because he is part of an absolutely extraordinary and glamorous world that includes, you know, the surrealist artists, the couture designers, the great performers of the age. It's a wonderfully sort of international story as well.
Yeah. It seems that in general, collectors are very fond of fashion photography from the old ages. Is that, you think, a reaction to the daily overload of social media images?
Perhaps it is. You know, I've never thought about it in that way, but I think it's also about the rarity of those early prints. You know, a lot of the fashion photographs from the 1920s and 30s were destroyed, so there are very few of them around for collectors today. That's part of the reason that Horst made the platinum prints of Huney's work and that the estate archives are doing so now, is because these images simply don't exist as vintage prints, as we would call them, prints made at the time the pictures were taken. But I remember when I was researching the career of Horst for an exhibition a few years ago, and I came across a fantastic letter that the model Lisa Fonsengreaves had written to him. Lisa actually appears in our exhibition at Griesebach.
She was one of the top models of her time?
Absolutely. The model Lisa Fonsengreaves, who appears in one of the first Huney photographs in our exhibition, was also a great favourite of Horst. And she went on to marry the American photographer Irving Penn. And Lisa stayed friends with a lot of the photographers she worked with in the 1930s in Paris. And she was a real superstar model in Paris at that time. She trained as a dancer and she came to Paris from Sweden. But in 1976, an article was published in Vogue celebrating Horst's long career, and a study of Lisa taken in 1939 was also published. And when she saw this, she wrote to Horst to express her gratitude, and this is what she says in her letter. "I feel such soothing blessings by your beautiful work, even more so today when we live in a sea of flickering snapshots bombarded from everywhere." And, you know, that's many decades after she was photographed by Horst and Huney. And I think the sentiment of her letter could equally apply to both of those photographers, that there's something so iconic about those early pictures that is reassuring in this world of flickering snapshots that we live in today, you know, this sort of exhausting culture that we live in where we never stop being bombarded by images everywhere we go.
And she wrote that 30 years before the internet was invented. So she already felt bombarded. That's interesting.
That is so true. And it's extraordinary, isn't it? And, you know, to me, it's exactly what you said, that, you know, there is an appeal of these early prints for collectors, for museums, that somehow contemporary images can never match, because there's a rarity to them. And, you know, today it's very easy to take a picture. If we think back to the beginning of Huney's career in the 1920s, even just making a photograph of a suitable quality to be reproduced in a magazine was very difficult. It, you know, required that large plate camera, it required huge lights and assistance. It was not a simple task. It, you know, it wasn't just the click of a button on the phone like it is today for some of us.
So, Susanna, now let me ask you two questions that we ask many of our guests here in Die Sucht zu sehen. The first one is, if you could choose a piece of art for yourself, no matter how expensive or unreachable, which one would it be?
That's even worse than asking me my favorite photo.
Could be the same.
I guess I would like something that I could put in my garden. I spend a lot of time outdoors, and so I think I would want a spectacular sculpture that I could put in my garden, and rain or shine, it would survive the elements for centuries to come. But I'll have to have a bit more time to think about that, I think.
About the artist who did it. Okay. So the second question would be, what's your favorite museum all over the world?
Wow. There are so many. And I feel like I probably haven't even visited 5% of them, you know.
It's from the ones you visited. And it's just for right now. You could say something else tomorrow if someone else asks.
I guess for me, you know, the V&A will always be one of my favourite museums because I have spent so many years of my working life in that building, yet I still feel it holds a lot of secrets. And I think all museums, big museums, have that in common, that you can visit again and again and again and always discover something new. You can always find something you haven't seen before or learn something you didn't know before. And that for me is what makes museums such an exciting place to spend time.
Yes, that was a nice answer. Dear Susanna, it was great talking to you. So thank you very much for joining us at Die Sucht zu sehen.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Das war Folge 31 von Die Sucht zu sehen. Wir freuen uns schon auf unsere nächsten Gäste und auf Sie. In 2 Wochen auf griesebach.com und überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.